So what we just did is solve a statistical problem with a statistical answer. The statistical problem, the omnibus ANOVA doesn't give us all the information we need in a multiple condition design. The statistical solution, pairwise comparisons. Here's something you'll get used to. Every time you solve a statistical problem with a statistical answer, there's still a problem. It's just a different problem. One of my favorite poems from childhood, a book that my grandma read to me all the time. You're up in a plane, it's a beautiful day. That's good. The engine stops. Ooh, that's bad. But you have a parachute. That's good. Parachute doesn't open. Ooh, that's bad. But there's a haystack under you. That's good. There's a pitchfork and a haystack. Ooh, that's bad. You miss the pitchfork, but you miss the haystack. That's your future. So we have solved the problem of needing more information than the omnibus gives us by doing pairwise comparisons. The problem that pairwise comparisons causes is what's called alpha inflation. Now, type 1 error, often symbolized as P, right, the p-value, whole big conversation whether that's the same thing as alpha or not. For some people, type 1 error and P and alpha all represent the same thing. Your best guess of the likelihood of a type 1 error if you reject the null. Other people differentiate between alpha being the p-value that's your rule and P being the data from the analysis. Okay? And I can't help. Some people just treat them as synonyms, which makes the most sense in the notion of alpha inflation. So alpha inflation, as you know, whenever we reject the null, there's a chance of committing a type 1 error, thinking there's a mean difference when there really isn't one in the population. The chance of a type 1 error is estimated by the p-value. And let me say that over and over and over again. Estimated by the p-value. There are multiple other ways of estimating the probability of a type 1 error, depending upon what information you start with. In the coolest of all of these, in Bayesian statistics, you've already got a pretty good idea of the probability of a type 1 error, and you're just adding information to it from this particular analysis. Most of the time, analyses that you're likely to see are called frequentist analyses, and it means that we treat each one as a new event, and we estimate the probability as best we can from the existing data in that data set. If we reject the null because P was set to less than 0.05, then there's about a 5% chance that we made a type 1 error. When we make multiple pairwise comparisons, the type 1 error rate for each is about 0.05. I don't know why I don't make this bigger and prettier. But that error rate accumulates across comparisons called alpha inflation. So if we have three IV conditions and make the three pairwise comparisons, we have three times about a 0.05 risk or a 0.15 risk. Now notice how the language changes. For a single analysis, P tells us the probability of committing a type 1 error for that analysis if we reject the null. That's the one you're used to. Now we're talking about another thing called an experiment-wise or an experiment-wide alpha, which is the probability of making at least one type 1 error in a set of tests. How are we doing? So we're not saying there's a 15% chance for each of them. We're saying there's a 15% chance of at least one amongst the three. We're willing to take a 5% risk three times. That's what you get. So alpha inflation is increasing chance of making a type 1 error as more pairwise comparisons are conducted. Alpha correction is adjusting the set of tests of pairwise differences to correct for alpha so that at the end of the set of analyses, we have about the 5% risk that we thought we were going to have when we started. This is where the argument starts. How to best estimate that, what to take into account, what to not take into account. The biggest single issue is It is possible for that to be significant, but this pairwise comparison after alpha correction to be non-significant. Yes, it does. Anything you do to thwart type 1 inflates type 2 and vice versa. There is no way within this model to unhinge the dependency between those two. Measurement people call it ipsative. As one goes up, the other has to go down. And this is the ongoing argument. If this 10-point difference is significant when you only look at those two conditions, shouldn't this 10-point difference, assuming similar standard deviations in power, shouldn't this also be significant as opposed to, no, we need a bigger effect if we look at more than one comparison? That's the principal centerpiece of the argument. The other distinction that you will see, sometimes see drug into this argument, is between a priori and post hoc hypotheses. If you have a hypothesis ahead of time that's born of the literature, that already is less of a risk than something that you discovered only by looking at the data set, called a post hoc hypothesis. So the a priori post hoc is a little different than matching. Okay, there it was before or after assignment. Here it's before or after you see the data. So any hypothesis before you see the data counts as a priori. Anytime you go, oh yeah, I should have hypothesized that. Look at that big, beautiful effect. 60 is better than everything else. I meant to say that all along. Doesn't count. That's why you see things like people registering their proposals. Some journals actually allow you to register a proposal, and including in that is you set your alphas or your acceptable p-values, and then that's the way you do it. And if they agreed to your rule set, then they agree to publish if you play within your rule set. When I was you, frightening prospect on both sides, when I was you, we were just coming off probably the worst of this, where it was so amazing that it was things like, you have 5% error rate to spend however you choose. So you could say to yourself, I'm going to test this with a p-value of 0.049999, and I'm going to test this with a p-value of... Because you got 5 cents to spend, you can do it however you want. Imagine what this did to replication. Because the one I thought was the pairwise comparison I thought was most important, if we didn't agree, we could get exactly the same results. And because we're playing around with p-values and alphas, we might get different results strictly because of the setting of the acceptable type 1 error rate. Here's what I think is the most important part of this entire conversation. In most ANOVA books, there will be a chapter, maybe two, on all of this. What do we do with multiple conditions? Going through the different things that we're looking at today. And then they move on to the factorial ANOVAs. You know, the ones that have multiple IVs? And there might be two paragraphs on alpha inflation, where they're running way more follow-up analyses in these big factorial designs than in the three condition, but they've stopped losing their mind about the pairwise comparisons because, as you'll see, what you brought up, the more you correct to protect type 1 errors, you are going to inflate your type 2 errors. We already know that we have a tendency to make type 2 errors because our sample sizes aren't as big as they should be for our effect sizes that we're looking for. And if you're then going to tighten up the acceptable alpha, you're just going to make that hell. So that, I think, is one of the important things to consider, is that some of these arguments are beautiful discussions of mathematical elegance, statistical realities, but some of that leads to ongoing pragmatic decisions that causes serious problems. Because I promised you, every time we solve a statistical problem with a statistical answer, we have another statistical problem. The statistical problem was alpha inflation. We fix it with alpha correction, and now we've got a shift from being scared about type 1 errors to producing vast numbers of type 2 errors. What's the answer? Well, there's a couple of answers, but perhaps the most important is you got to know what your research community expects.